IT transformation calls for true collaboration between cross-functional teams, from leaders to developers. Stop reacting to change and start leading transformation. Visit BoozAllen.com/Federal News Radio.
For years, companies and agencies have offered to teach employees the basics of cardiopulmonary resuscitation, or CPR. It's something regular people can do until medically trained personnel arrive. But what about when somebody is bleeding? How do you stop that until emergency personnel arrive? The National Center for Disaster Medicine and Public Health, part of the Uniformed Services University, has developed a smartphone app just for that situation. Joining me with more, Dr. Craig Goolsbee, Director of Science at the NCDMPH. Dr. Goolsbee, good to have you on.
Thanks so much for having me.
And I guess I didn't realize it is possible for non-medical people, other than for like a minor cut, to be able to deal with major bleeding, but apparently it's something that is worthwhile to do.
Yeah, it is. This is a new concept that we've been working on now for the past several years and are excited to share it with the public and increase the ability of the public to be able to respond when there is a bleeding emergency.
And did this knowledge originate in DOD situations, in battle time situations, or is it something you've gleaned from general public health situations?
Well, I think the knowledge ultimately starts on the battlefield. So when you look at the experience of soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan and the improvements in survival that were made, many of those improvements came from the immediate treatment of bleeding on the battlefield. And that was often done by non-medical soldiers. So the person's buddy who was next to him, or that soldier, him or herself, may have been the one to apply a tourniquet and stop life-threatening bleeding before medical people were even involved. And so that experience then was looked at by a number of different groups, particularly starting after the Sandy Hook shootings in Connecticut, to try to think, is there something better we can do? Can we translate this information to the public? And when a bleeding emergency takes place, on a city street or at a sporting event or wherever it may occur, can we do something to use that battlefield knowledge to save lives here?
And relative to, say, something like CPR, it strikes me that bleeding situations can take many, many forms and formats, from like a stab wound to, you know, a slice or something, or you know, a severing of an artery, that require different mechanical applications in order to stop them.
Right. That's true. And, you know, I think for internal bleeding, certainly we don't really have a way for lay people to be able to, respond and do something. That will oftentimes require going to an operating room, for example, to be able to do that. But for external hemorrhage, the good news is that it's a pretty common theme that pressure will stop bleeding. And so the things we're really trying to get across, I would say there are really three simple goals in the Stop the Bleed campaign, is to motivate people to act. So kind of changing the paradigm of, you know, only calling for an ambulance and waiting for them to arrive. We certainly want people to call for an ambulance, but motivate them to act, be able to learn to differentiate life-threatening from non-life-threatening bleeding, and then understand that pressure is what stops bleeding. And we talk a lot about tourniquets in the Stop the Bleed campaign that can be applied to arms or legs. And those are life-saving, but really all they're doing is applying pressure around an extremity. And just like applying direct pressure for external bleeding on a chest or a back or some other place could also be life-saving.
And how is the app organized? What does it tell people to do, and what kinds of situations does it describe to users?
So it really tries to do those same things, you know, the motivation, the differentiation of life-threatening from non-life-threatening bleeding, and then the understanding of how to apply pressure. And so it's organized, first of all, when you go into it, you can indicate if you're in an emergency situation or not. So if you're in an emergency, then it pulls up some very quick information that you could use right on the scene to act. However, what we're really anticipating people doing more with the app is using it to spend, 15 minutes to kind of go through and learn some of these skills, which we're hoping then will be remembered and could be refreshed just in time if they were confronted with a bleeding emergency. So after they pick if there's an emergency or not, maybe take quick action based on an emergency. If not, then it pulls them to about a 5-minute video that explains how to apply tourniquets and some really, really, we think, useful visual ways to try to differentiate life-threatening from non-life-threatening bleeding, really based on simple concepts of just volume and flow of blood. And then walks through the steps of how to apply a tourniquet, talks about direct pressure, and then there's questions and answers and quiz and some things that are very interactive for the users to go through.
We're speaking with Dr. Craig Goolsbee, Director of Science at the National Center for Disaster Medicine and Public Health. And what about the, I guess you could call it the ick factor in a layman dealing with heavy external hemorrhaging. Is that something that's addressed in the video?
Well, you know, what we're trying to do again is to motivate people to act, and you know, the risk of like a transmission of a disease from a contact if somebody has intact skin, for example, is low. We encourage people to wear gloves if they're available, but we feel like the absence of gloves is not necessarily the absence of action on somebody's part. And you have to remember that very often when you're in a situation where somebody is bleeding, it may be that that person is your husband or wife or your child or your parent or your good friend, or this is not just you know, strangers on the street that we're looking at, but this may be somebody that you would be very motivated to want to do something to help. So there is some of that, and we encourage people to use you know, barrier protections whenever possible, but hopefully by understanding what to do and understanding that you can be a help and save somebody's life, that would overcome some of the ick factor that you mentioned.
Now, the average person's not carrying a tourniquet, so what should they do if they don't have one?
Yeah, that's a great question. And so in general, we think pressure is what stops bleeding. And so we want to encourage people to apply direct pressure using whatever means they have available. It could be that they have the luxury of having something like gauze available, but if not, things like t-shirts, newspapers, neckties, various things could also be used. And the Stop the Bleed logo just shows a hand because we want to encourage people to understand that just using direct pressure with your hand may be adequate to stop bleeding in somebody. There is progress being made towards having tourniquets available for the public, though. There are public bleeding control kits that can be found at some airports now. Some sports stadiums are starting to include them. School systems are starting to have them. So they're certainly not ubiquitous in the way that you might see like AEDs, which are used for CPR, but they're starting to get more and more out there. So if you find yourself in a bleeding emergency, or if you're traveling through your, you know, airports on a flight, look around and you might see the Stop the Bleed stickers on some places like that. There are also personal kits that are available for people to purchase so they can have tourniquets. We do think that a manufactured tourniquet that's designed for that purpose works better than somebody trying to improvise with like a belt or something like that. In general, that's a more successful way to do it.
Sure. And in your experience dealing with professionals, either in the battle area or other emergency professionals that deal with bleeding injuries and so forth, do they tend to be glad when people, laymen, have gotten to the scene before them and can help staunch that bleeding? In other words, it doesn't do more harm than good.
Yeah, you know, this is a really new area that we're in, so we're really kind of exploring like how many lay people are taking these actions. So from my experience, you know, I was an Air Force emergency medicine physician previously, and my experience being in the war in Iraq, and I took care of patients that made it to me that I was really surprised arrived to me alive. And I think the reason they did that was because of these things like tourniquets and the direct pressure and the battlefield medicine that they received. So I think from a medical standpoint, we'd be happy to see people that have more blood in their body than less blood in their body, because that makes the chance of them surviving much better. In terms of, you know, how widespread this is going to get and the types of actions we're going to see, that's still we're waiting to be seen. The risk of harm from this, there is a risk of harm. You know, we certainly don't want to leave tourniquets on for a long period of time. You know, that does stop blood flow to the tissue. But we think the risk is overall very low. And if you can put the tourniquet on or get really good direct pressure on and get somebody to medical care quickly, which is almost always possible in the U.S. setting, the risk is very, very low that we're going to cause harm by doing an action like this.
And this app is widely available at the popular app download spots and got through the approvals of the different gatekeepers in those places?
Yes, it's available on both the Apple iTunes store and the Google store now, and it's freely available for download.
Dr. Craig Goolsbee is Director of Science at the National Center for Disaster Medicine and Public Health at Uniformed Services University. Thanks so much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Find a link to the app and to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. Subscribe to all of our interviews at iTunes or Podcast One.